This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that will get your friends' attention. Eye-catching t-shirts like the John McCain winter sweater, ho ho ho, yippee-ki-yay, every generation of bat suits, Lynx lawn care, Kunstrup since 1986, Zangief's gym, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to coatsofthepodcast.com. That's coatsofthepodcast.com, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome tees. Busted Tees through coatsofthepodcast.com. And welcome to a very special edition of the Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G, and tonight I'm joined by a very special guest. We have Jeff here with me from, what's the name of your podcast?
It's That ADHD Show, ADHD like the condition. So that's what it is, ADHDshow.com.
So yes, make sure to check that out. So Jeff and I, we had been talking on Twitter, and I'll give Jeff a second to give his Twitter name out and plug the website some more and whatnot. But we were talking online, and we were both fans of two events taking place right now. One in DC Comics with Batman's Endgame, where the Joker has come back to play Batman and his allies. And over at Marvel Comics, the Spider-Verse event has kicked off, where every Spider-Man or Spider character that Marvel has the rights to is joining together with the 616 Peter Parker to take on Morlun and his inheritors. So we thought, why not get together and podcast about it?
Sure.
That's basically how that came about. But Jeff, make sure to let people know where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah. You can find me at Jeff J Says, JeffJSays. That's where I am on Twitter.
Cool. And I am at Tim DOGG98 and at The Click Nation. And of course, the website is TheClickNation.com. So before even jumping into Batman's Endgame, let's take a look back at how the Batman franchise has fared in the New 52 since its. Since it relaunched under Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. Have you been following Batman since the New 52?
Yeah, I've been on board. Batman has gone from, for me, it's always a mainstay with my DC pulls, but now actually that I think about it, the Batman books have been the only ones to survive from my trimming down, only because Certain storylines within DC other than Batman have kind of just been like whatever to me. Right. So Batman has always been the one that stuck. So
you're a little better than me. I've grown up a Marvel guy through and through. Always read Marvel, and only recently, like I would always kind of keep up with DC things through like the different comic book websites, reading the articles and going to Wikipedia and reading articles. And only like the last maybe 2 years, I've really started reading just DC comics, trying to get into more of their books. And Batman's definitely, like you said, stayed on my reading list. The creative team of Snyder and Capullo, they're probably the best creative team at DC right now. And I don't know if I'm going to go old school now. I remember Greg Capullo being the artist back when I was reading X-Force back in like the early 90s.
Ooh. Was this the first volume with this, like Cable and Ferrall and all? That's McFarlane, yeah, this is after McFarlane though, right?
Well, after Liefeld. This was after
Liefeld. Yeah, I forgot about you. X-Force had so much great artist, man. Yeah. I forgot about Layfield too.
Like, when I really got into comics was like when X-Men number one and X-Force number one came out around that same time from Lee and Liefeld. But I think when Capullo was on X-Force was, I want to say Fabian Nyziezza was the writer. He actually made an appearance, I believe, on that agent or the ABC special that Marvel had, the 75 years. I don't know if you saw that when...
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, when it took the time slot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Batman. So we both enjoy what's been going on in the new 52 version of Batman. And I tried to make it a point to go back and read sort of some of the Court of Owls, Night of Owls stuff. But I read like maybe the first six issues of Batman and never finished that run to... Mm-hmm. At least of the earlier Night of Owls, Court of Owls storyline. I heard it was great, of course.
Yeah, it was definitely good because it more or less centered around. Because if you watch the show Gotham, it at its core, the message that they're giving you is that no matter what type of good that you're doing, there's some type of evil that's pulling the strings in Gotham that you don't know about. And that's really what the Court of Owls is. It's a group of individuals who are making everything move in Gotham for their own motives, where they're like an urban legend that's actually legit. So it was the way they did that whole arc was really dope.
And I always like those sort of like behind the scenes, you know, people pulling the strings that you never knew about type of stories. It's always kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gotham, what are your thoughts on Gotham?
It started off, kind of, I don't want to say it started off slow. They were going with, the villain of the week, pattern for the first few. Mm-hmm. So, they were kind of introducing the villain and letting the villain, like, we're tuning in to see who the villain is next and then letting the characters be the side story. Once they started letting the characters carry the show, that's when it started getting good. And I think it's finally hit its stride where they found the balance between who's the main antagonist and this is where we're going to let the characters tell the story. So it's been real. I've liked it. I mean, it's had its few moments where I'm like, come on. But, you know, you're also talking to somebody who stuck with Arrow through season one, where a lot of people were like, oh, this is terrible. And it found its legs late. And now they're just running.
Yeah.
So but Gotham definitely for any old school Batman fan, any newer fans, is definitely something worth watching.
I need to give it more of a chance then, because actually I enjoyed Arrow's first season, but of course second and third seasons were just awesome so far.
Definitely.
But like Gotham right now for me is more like background noise. Like I kind of have it on the TV in the background while I'm doing other stuff. I'm not really focusing on it too much. I did the first like two episodes, but since then it's just kind of been on. So I need to see if it's on Hulu Plus. Maybe I can get caught up with it.
Well, your whatever your service provider, your cable provider or satellite should have. Well, I haven't been on satellite in a while, but it should be on demand, Fox on demand, so you can.
I need to check that out because it's...
Troll it up.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I forget I have the on-demand, too.
And also, if you ever need recommendations on how the show is going, you can go to ADHDshow.com. We review it every week.
That's true.
You led me with the great plug, so I had to slam it, man.
Yeah. Hey, went in the fast break together. So, and plus, I think Gotham just had their mid-season finale, right? Maybe
I think they're calling it a fall finale or whatever. So,
okay, all right. So back to the Batman comics. It's funny because death—it is death of the family, right? Or is it death in I always get it.
Death of the Family. Death of the Family.
Yeah, Death of the Family. Mm-hmm. I bought the hardcover when it came out, and I was like, I'm going to read this. But, of course, I like try to read every comic that comes out every week. So I still haven't gotten around to actually reading the entire story. But I know it focused on the Joker finally making his New 52 appearance. Or, yeah, he finally made his New 52 appearance, and he was sort of like plaguing the Batman family. And it was sort of like the Joker was saying how Batman needed him. It was like Joker felt like he was a part of Batman's family.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended with the Joker's fate. Well, yeah, the whole thing was Joker's... Was it earlier in the New 52 his face was cut off?
Yeah, I believe so. And that he lost his face, and then he cut off... I believe he cut his own face off.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I think he cut his own face off, and then that just became the nastiest thing ever.
And I want to say that happened in the issue of the Detective Comics. It actually didn't happen in the Batman, like, number one issue. Because I did read that, now that I think about it. It was, like, in the Detective Comics number one, I believe, mm-hmm. is where, like, the issue ended, and it was a full-page picture of the Joker's face nailed on, like, a wall. So when he appeared back in Death of the Family, he had his, like, face stitched back on his head, which was kind of gave for a creepy visual, which I think they played out in the different covers, at least for the earlier issues.
Yeah.
And
he more or less had the doll maker, I believe, cut it off.
Oh, okay. And let's see, I believe it crossed over into
Detective Comics, yeah.
Detective
number one. Batman Detective Comics number one.
And then when Death of the Family started, it crossed over into the various Bat titles and Red Hood and the Outlaws, since Red Hood is a member of that book, and Catwoman, Batgirl, books of that nature. And I kept remembering that it seemed like they were going to tease a death in the final issue, and some people were wondering if it was going to be Alfred or Damien. And I remember the very last issue, there was that... Joker had all the Bat family members like tied to a dinner table, and they all it looked like they had their faces stitched on just like he did.
Yeah, like it was almost like they were wearing masks, kind of like symbolizing his own face being off.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just wild, because he went real destructive with it. And even reading Endgame, I know you're going to get to Endgame, but Batman speaks on it in Endgame, where he more or less says, before Joker, this was all about games, because Joker, you know, you don't have Batman without the Joker. They're like the two, they're like yin and yang when it comes to their story.
Right.
And Joker is almost breaking the fourth wall, realizing that, where he's like, you know, ain't no you without me. Straight like that. Ain't no you without me. So I make you better. I make you who you are. I need to challenge you. You need to be at your best. You can't do that without having, like, it's almost like I have to be your greatest villain, because you ain't going to be shit anywhere else.
Right.
And Batman even says that Death of the Family was the first time where it was like, he had a quote where he said, it's like Joker considered him almost like a friend, and now it's like the friend is turned into an enemy. And that's kind of how he was attacking Batman with Death of the Family. Like, if you're not going to let me be better with you, I'm going to take you down and your whole family with you.
And one of the fallouts from Death of the Family, which I actually don't think they followed up with very well in the Bat books, was like the Robin, or Red Robin, Red Hood, and Batgirl, basically, and Nightwing at the time, since he was still around. They
Damian too.
And Damian, they've like disassociated themselves from Batman. It was like the family was splintered.
Yeah. Even though, was crazy.
But then it seemed like they were always kind of getting back together, like through Batman Eternal at least. Because I know in Batman Eternal a couple issues ago, they made a big deal about like the family coming back together to help him battle what's going on in Batman Eternal.
But, yeah, you mean Batman and Robin, right? Because I don't read Batman Eternal.
I don't either, but I read like a website that like a recap of like they take like the last like five issues and do a recap. And one of the things they point out was like the family's back together. But like you just said, Batman, I have started reading Batman and Robin for the Mega Rises story. Yeah. And they are back together in there too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like that's really why, that's one of the reasons why they've come together, is because they don't want to let, like he eventually was all, you know, at one point he was going to earn back their trust. And he's earned it back by telling them no more. It's hilarious that he tells them no more secrets. We're out in the open. You're my family. I need to trust in you the same way you trust in me. He goes through that whole spiel, but at the same time telling them that I'm going to Apocalypse alone to go get Damian. All the while not telling them that, and for those that don't read, from the events of, what was that thing called? Was it called Fear Itself? No, was it called Fear Itself? The last major event that DC had.
Oh, Forever Evil.
Forever Evil. Fear Itself was a Marvel thing. I couldn't remember it. Well, basically where a multiverse bad Justice League got to their world and took over. Mm. And one of the effects was their Batman outing Nightwing as being Dick Grayson. Because I guess in his world, his Dick Grayson ended up getting killed by their Joker, who was a good guy, ironically. And he like cut up Dick Grayson or whatever. So he wanted this world's Dick Grayson, or the main DC, I guess it's Earth One, their DC to be that Dick Grayson to be his new sidekick. And they outed to the world who Dick Grayson, that Dick Grayson was Nightwing. So in order to kind of cover up the easy association that Dick Grayson and Bruce Wayne are together, so that must mean the world thinks he's dead. And that's why the Grayson comic book has been going on. It kind of mirrors what happened with the Winter Soldier in Marvel.
A lot of people
it's exactly what it is.
That comparison, since they're both some former sidekicks.
That's covert now that everybody think is dead. Like it's the exact same shit, and he doesn't tell them that. So yeah, they got the, long story short, the family's together and they're strong again.
Mm-hmm. And then the last big major arc in Batman to take place before Endgame is Zero Year, which was Scott Snyder's take on Batman's Year One, basically retelling his origin for the New 52. And like you said, phenomenal. So Zero Year is where I actually started reading like Batman like consecutively since Zero Year. I've been up to date on Batman, and it seems like since these story arcs are so long, they probably read better in trade. But I feel like I need, even though I did enjoy them reading month to month, it feels like I probably need to go back and read them all, like Zero Year all together as one story in one like sitting to appreciate it more.
Yeah, that's how I felt about, I know you probably weren't reading, but Grant Morrison's run on Batman.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to read hardcover Batman comics that came out recently, read his run, because this man plays a long game. And I feel like every writer since has kind of not copied the style, but Batman is a detective. It's at its heart, it's a detective book.
Right.
Figuring something out. So, you know, you have to play the long game. And what I mean by the long game is it goes over a series of books. They put clues in that you may or may not see or may not be able to decipher. Like that book, Grant Morrison's run, stuff would happen. And it made you want to go back and get your books to see where how you missed it. It's that ill. And I feel like with all the books since then, it's been the same thing, especially with Zero Year. Zero Year was like I don't want to call it drawn out. It wasn't drawn out because that's a negative connotation. Yeah. It was over a series of time. It was just a long story. And I haven't been used to those long story arcs where it hasn't been an event, quote unquote, in a while. And it just really, because I think all the books were going through their own Zero Years or something like that. Like, because DC always has some theme thing. So I think they all were kind of going through Zero Year. But Batman Zero Year was like, yeah, dope.
And like I say, a couple of seeds were even planted in Zero Year. Like they introduced the Red Hood gang, and the leader of the Red Hood gang, was he possibly Joker? We don't know.
Yeah.
And then the choice of villain was a good one too. Because I remember Snyder saying in interviews that the Riddler was one of his favorite villains he wanted to tackle next. And he was saving him for Zero Year. And it's funny because I always remember reading like in interviews, like people saying, like the different writers saying, you know, some writers are scared to tackle the Riddler because you had to come up with riddles.
That's true.
To use in the story and to actually make them interesting. And that's a lot easier said than done, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was reading Zero Year. Some of them riddles were off the hook. Like, I'm like, where are they getting this shit? Like, some of them are just like, if I was taking a tally of the riddles that I've gotten since I've read Batman, I'd probably be like at 25%. Now, I don't think I'm an idiot. It's just like some of the stuff is like, yo.
And I wish, wow. I think there was a riddle in the very last issue. Scott gave, he gave like a shout out, or he gave recognition to whoever it was that actually came up with the riddle for him. I'm not sure if it was James Tinian or not, but yeah. So yeah, so always, you know, if you're a fan out there and you think Riddler is not as an important villain as maybe the Joker or some of the others, just remember how hard it is to come up with the different riddles for him to use.
Yeah, it's true. And you can't really half-ass it, because if you do, then it's like, it's obvious, yeah, you know?
The story won't be as interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So that leads us up to Endgame, where, and Endgame is interesting because it takes place after Batman Eternal is supposed to end, which of course doesn't end until the spring, I believe. So it's like, and that's always like a interesting thing where it's like you jump the story ahead while the story is still taking place in Eternal. This all takes place at the end. So you have Batman living out of one of the Wayne buildings inside, you know, in the heart of the city. Alfred is
sick.
Yeah, sick from things that happened in Eternal. So his daughter, Julia, is kind of running things as far as, like, the computer and being, like, the Penny One for him.
And not to cut you off, but I didn't really keep up with it. But so is he living there because of the whole Arkham Manor thing?
Yeah, I believe that's what it's for.
And I don't even – and I guess Eternal is supposed to say why he gave up the manor for Arkham, right?
Yeah.
And they haven't told what happened, right?
It's been told in Eternal. It's like...
They said it. Okay.
Yeah. Basically what happened is... And this is just from me reading up on what happened. Because I tried keeping up with Batman Eternal. And I've actually got I've got like a backlog of like 10 plus issues that I keep saying I'm going to sit down and try to get caught up. But just trying to keep up with weekly books is so hard.
Yeah,
but definitely. But
it is weekly. Yes, sick.
Yeah. So I forget. I think that one of the main villains in Eternal set it up where Arkham Asylum got like blown up or whatever, so they need a place to house the criminals. So Bruce Wayne decides to lend his, you know, Bruce Wayne manner to be the new Arkham Asylum, or Arkham Manor, as the new series that just launched from Jerry Duggan is the writer on it. And actually, their second issue comes out tomorrow, so or Wednesday, November 26th, depending on whenever this episode gets online.
Whatever it goes up, right?
Yeah. But I would say that's a, even though it's only been one issue I've read so far, I did enjoy it. So that's going to be a series I'm going to try to keep up with. Arkham Manor. I keep wanting to say Asylum.
Yeah, I've been fighting that myself.
But so that's the setup so far in Endgame, and I'm trying to remember how that first issue of Endgame went. Was it someone attacking the city?
No. Well, it started off, I believe, as someone was either attacking the city, or it was like a random attack, and then he was talking about the Scarecrow. So I don't know if the Scarecrow, maybe they carried it over from another arc. Maybe it's from Eternal, because I didn't see, like, it was just random, kind of like how they broke it out.
Oh, yeah, because he's having, like, visions or hallucinations. Yeah.
Saying that he got drugged or whatever.
Yeah, because they were saying that the toxin is still in his system, because mm-hmm. he keeps getting these visions of Lark and Bluebird in that one vision where he's like shooting a machine gun or something, and it mm-hmm. has the black kid from Zero Year,
yeah, where he's his well that's actually, oh yeah, that was the flashback I was about to say. That was the Future's End issue
of Batman and Robin, where he's actually Robin.
Yeah,
that's another thing that they've done a great job of, is introducing all these new supporting characters in the Bat books. Like, you have, we mentioned Julia Pennyworth, Lark, or Duke, I think his name is, the kid from
Duke, yeah,
Batman from Zero Year. You have the Talon from that had his own series for a little while. He was from the Court of Owls. Who else am I forgetting? I'm trying to remember from that.
I'm trying to think.
There's been a bunch of people. Bluebird or Harper Row. She's going to become Bluebird. Oh, and Spoiler, they introduced in Batman Eternal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, there's so many people now. It's like Batman has his own army.
Yeah, I thought that Batman Incorporated was crazy, but this whole thing he got now, I'm just like, yo, he's ready for war.
Yeah. But so like you said, he's still suffering from the Scarecrow toxin, and then something happens in the city that he has to go investigate, and then Wonder Woman like crashed into his new.
Yeah, he was just chilling. Actually, what happened was he was just chilling, and Wonder Woman comes out of nowhere and crashes in whatever this bunker is or whatever it is that he's at, and just starts attacking. And like, she's going at him, and they're attacking, whatever. And then eventually it's like the entire Justice League A-list is coming to attack him out of nowhere.
But of course he's Batman, so he's ready for him. He's got his own Batman armor, which I thought would be similar to what he took to Apocalypse in the Batman and Robin little series that's going on, since he's got this little battle suit to take on Darkseid, or Darkseid, however you say it. I always forget. But then Superman shows up, and we see Superman has the Joker grin on his face, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was like that end issue. I was like, what? I was like, what the hell? Like, he's back?
I love how they kept it a secret. Because he talks about how in the interviews after that came out, he was Scott Snyder was saying how at New York Comic Con, he kept talking about, you know, how he did have plans for the Joker again in the future, but no one actually made the connection that when he said in the future, it would be in the upcoming Endgame series. Because the Endgame solicits had already come out, and the Endgame actually came out like maybe a couple weeks after New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, he was saying how they had to like fight DC to get them to not spoil it ahead of time, because that's something that they kind of wanted to spoil, because that would get, you know, more interest in more sales if you go out and promote that, you know, hey, the Joker's about to show up.
You know, I really hate that shit. Like, I hate this whole era of spoiling comics. Ironically, what brought me back into comics was when they spoiled the when did I come back? What did they spoil where I was like, what the hell?
It could be any number of things.
I'm trying to think. It wasn't Captain America's death, because I was already reading by then. It might have been...
Was it the Human Torches?
No, it wasn't. Nah, it wasn't that. I want to say it wasn't when Peter Parker unmasked. It wasn't that. It was something that happened where... I forgot what it was. It was like an event that they spoiled, where I was like, whoa, that happened in the comics? Let me go check it out. And I just started reading. I think it might have been X-Men or something like that. Something with the X-Men where the whole after No More Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was something like that. So ironically, that did bring me back. But when you're following a storyline and you watching the news and they tell you what the fuck happened, like, it really, really pissed me off. Like when Spider-Man unmasked, they blew that up.
Yeah,
and it was really like a, which side was he on? And they blew that up. When Captain America died, they blew that up. I forgot what else it was where I was like, yo, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Almost anything.
I think it might have been something in DC.
Almost anything big nowadays is gonna get like on the USA Today or whatnot. Which, I remember, what has DC come out and announced like that recently? So they haven't really had anything big to announce that's been like earth shattering. Marvel does it a lot more than DC.
Not really. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, and even with the whole thing of like with the shows that are on, right, where they tell you who's going to show up in the season, like 3 or 4 weeks before they show up. And it's like, damn, I like to be surprised. You know? Like, you tell me this person is going to be there, that person is going to be there. I'm just like, come on, man. Like, we don't need that. But I don't know. Sorry about that. It's just like that whole spoiling thing just really...
Yeah. The problem with it is the 3 month solicits that promote stuff so far ahead, it spoils the current storylines.
Yeah.
But we found out that somehow the Joker has a toxin that's strong enough to control the Justice League, which is just wild to even think about.
When did he become a chemist, yo?
Yeah.
Like, he always has these toxins. I'm like, does he have someone on the payroll? Is it the Scarecrow who's like moonlighting as a consultant for the, like, where? And what's funny is in the second Endgame, he makes a comment to Batman where he says, "You really don't know me, do you?"
Yeah.
He's like, we know everything about you, but you really don't know me. And when he said that, I sat back and I was like, we know, none of us do. He's the most ambiguous. He has to be the most popular, ambiguous villain of all time. And, yeah. and I mean ambiguous in terms of who you are, really. not like your villain. Like, we don't know his real name. We don't know where he came from. We don't know his motivation. I mean, unless you want to believe Tim Burton and Jack Nicholson, like, that's their take. But we don't know. It's so ambiguous, and I feel like I don't know if that keeps with the appeal. You know what I'm saying? Like, the appeal of the Joker is he could be anything you think he is at the end of the day. But it's funny he said that, because it's like, are we finally going to get an origin for this man?
And what's crazy during Death of the Family is they kept like sort of teasing, not teasing, does Joker really know Batman's secret identity?
Exactly.
Because how did he even find the Batcave to tie everyone up and do that final showdown with Batman in the Batcave?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out if he does know. Like, I don't know if he really knows. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like he's one of those, I feel like he's one of those that's like, I don't want to know your secret identity because it ruins it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did play that.
I want to know you as Batman. I don't want to know him as whoever he is. I don't care.
Yeah, because when Batman's like badgering him in the Batcave before he falls off that cliff, he is like, Batman was like, just how Joker was kind of teasing the whole way, saying he knew who Batman was. Like, Batman was doing the same thing to Joker. And then I think he was even going to, like, say tell Joker who he really was. And Joker was like, no, I don't want to know. And then kind of jumped off the cliff himself.
Yeah.
But, so Endgame, well, we're only 2 issues in, so can't really talk too much about Endgame, except Joker somehow has this strong toxin. He's controlling the Justice League somehow. And Batman went to Arkham, the remains of Arkham, and went to Joker's old cell there. And then we find out, I guess, who Joker was the whole time while he was thought to be dead from falling off that cliff. And he was supposedly I forget who it was now, but he was someone that was working at Arkham, or...
Yeah, he was like a younger guy that was one of the people working in. Eric Border is his name.
Mm.
So he's somebody since before the fall of Arkham.
Yeah.
That meant he's an Eternal. I think he was an Eternal.
Which, of course, since we're not keeping up with that, we had no idea who that is.
Didn't know who the hell he was, yeah.
I don't know who that is. But hey, it didn't stop me from enjoying the issue any less.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's it for Endgame.
Well, you don't leave out the most important part was who Eric Borda is, unless you're not trying to spoil that.
I probably just forgot, so you can go ahead and...
Oh, well, the dude that they hired the dude that Batman knew that worked in Arkham, he actually, I guess, was the Joker in disguise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what was crazy about it was that he was explaining to Batman how he did it, where he put muscle relaxers in his face so that his permanent smile wasn't there. He got some type of chemical that gives him pigmentation so that he wouldn't have the white face.
He got from Clayface, right?
I'm not sure.
I think he mentioned something about stealing something from Clayface to be able to change his facial features like that.
Yeah, like it was just like
he did his homework.
Yeah, exactly. Because he was even speaking about the whole face or whatever, and it was crazy because it was beautiful artwork on it was beautiful artwork on the illustrator's part. Who is that? Is that Capullo, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so how he was showing his transformation, like he's shagging, he's wiping off the wiping off the makeup, messing up his hair so that it turns green. The muscle relaxers are wearing off, so he's getting his face back. So yeah, now, I don't think he mentioned Clayface in it. He was just saying, like, you know, what I had to do to keep this face. So, and he got actually a brand new face. So yeah, it's wild. And it's funny because they kind of swerve you with the cover, because the cover is the Jokered out Superman. So you're thinking that he's just, that's what it's about. But, you know, the end was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So got to wait for part three to come out. And I wonder how long this is supposed to be, too.
No clue, man. No clue. I'm kind of I don't want to say I'm anti-solicit. But I kind of don't want to. I don't like getting it blown up. Like, I just know how people like read those all the time.
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
I mean, it's cool to check. Yeah, it's cool to check like the coming out or whatever. And they're usually good about hiding. If there's a big reveal, they're usually good about hiding, or they won't give the listers for number ones unless it's like, okay, this person's going to get their own thing. Because it's like, if somebody's in peril, and they ended up, and you see a solicit for a number one, it's like, oh, well, I guess they survive. You know, so, but yeah, I don't know how long this arc is supposed to run. I haven't seen, I usually check, like, glance at solicits just to see what the main stories are, but I haven't heard anything.
Yep. So, now on to the world of Spider-Man and Spider-Verse. So, before getting into Spider-Verse, we have to take a trip back to recap all the craziness that's gone on in Spider-Man's life, which started with the end of the original Amazing Spider-Man volume, and then was relaunched with Superior Spider-Man.
Yep. And
with that, keep the long story short, Spider-Man's villain, Dr. Octopus, was dying. He was able to transfer or switch minds with Peter Parker. So Peter Parker's mind went into Otto Octavius' body, and Otto Octavius' mind went into Peter Parker's body. And Otto's body passed away, and Peter was thought to be dead, and Otto was now in Spider-Man's body, and he swore to be the Superior Spider-Man, and that's when Superior Spider-Man launched. Peter Parker's brain waves were still in his body, but then that he went away for a while, but then came back. And basically, it ends up with Superior Spider-Man ending. Peter has control of his body again, and Otto's brain waves are thought to be gone. Then you have Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that's been one of the better runs I've seen in Spider-Man. I've been reading Spider-Man since the 80s. So I would tell you that I was kind of worried, because I was like, oh, this sounds like a gimmick. They have Spider-Ock, they were calling him at one point. Yeah. It was like, come on, Doc Ock is Spider-Man. But it gave him a new dynamic, to the point where when Peter came back, people were kind of like, whoa, we don't need him back just yet. You know, give us some more Spider-Ock. Oh, what? He had to come back, because unless you're going to turn, and that was always cool, because you were wondering if he was ever going to be evil, and he wasn't evil. He was just like he was almost like a Punisher version of himself.
Right.
So, you know,
he was still doing good deeds, but
for selfish reasons.
There you go.
Yeah. So, but it worked. It really worked. I had fun reading it.
What I loved about it was just like almost every issue ended with like a, almost like a cliffhanger. It's like, what did Otto do this issue? Who did he kill, or who did he offend this time? He was going to war almost with the Avengers. He got J. Jonah Jameson on his side originally, and then used him as a pawn. He took over, he created his own Spider Island with minions. Just so much happened in those 30 issues.
He even He even captured the other Sinister Six and was holding them and had them on mind control. Like, it was crazy. Like, it was like, yo, who does this guy think he is? But it was dope. It was some of the best reading art on Spider-Man that I've seen as a long time reader and a fan. So
yes, I agree, because I've been reading The Amazing Spider-Man for many years. So that was the Superior Spider-Man.
You survived the Clone Saga, huh?
Well, that's like right around that period when I kind of stopped reading comics, like right around when I think I had started college around that time.
Yeah.
So it was like, I remember the Clone Saga, but kind of, sort of, not really.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like engraved in my mind like other people who complain about it incessantly.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was just a lot, man, from what I remember. And at the time, it was like a couple of clones. All right. Everybody, I thought I was a clone by the time I was reading it. That's how many clones it was, so.
Mm-hmm. And they've even left their impact on the series, because you still have some clones running around now.
Exactly.
Which we'll get to in the Spider-Verse portion of the discussion. But so Peter is back in his body just in time for the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie. Go figure.
Exactly.
And we get a brand new Amazing Spider-Man number 1. My whole issue, like, I've enjoyed Amazing Spider-Man since it's relaunched, but what I don't like is I felt like Peter hasn't really dealt with the fallout from what happened in Superior that much.
Yeah, it could have been dealt with. He could have been dealing with a lot more. But, like, I like the fact that it's been subtle with Black Cat. And yeah. Like, this is someone who loved him.
Because she had stuff happen to her in Superior Spider-Man.
Exactly. Because Otto fucked that up. So now she wants to make him pay. And the funny thing is, she believes him that he was mind controlled. She's like, still, I got a reputation to uphold. I got to get you now.
Yeah, he outed
her. He has to deal with that. And I think the other reason why he's not really dealing with the fallout is because the Marvel Universe is a cesspool right now. Like, it's really, everything is fucked up in the Marvel Universe right now. And I honestly think that nobody else has the time to sort out that whole Spider-Man thing. Like, when he came back, like, I was possessed. Everybody was like, all right, it makes sense. Let's go. We have incursions to deal with. And we have all of this. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory.
Yeah. And I do, like I said, I do like what they did with the Black Cat. But it kind of feels like they were seeding so much stuff for Spider-Verse in the first couple issues of Amazing Spider-Man. It feels like the Spider-Verse lead-in took away from some Peter dealing with the Superior Spider-Man fallout. Because the only thing that he dealt with was stuff with Anna Maria, who was Otto's girlfriend at the time. But we did get the introduction of the Silk character, who's going to get her own ongoing series after Spider-Verse is over with. And I actually like her as a new character. Dan Slott, the writer of Superior Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man, took the original Sin event where, you know, secrets, dark secrets were being revealed in the universe. He took that as a way to go back to Peter Parker's origin and say, what if someone else had been bitten by the radioactive spider?
Exactly.
And this girl, her name Cindy Moon, I believe her name is.
Yeah.
Was, I guess, in Peter's class that was at the place where the spider got hit with the radioactive rays and then bit Peter, but then also bit her. And I forget exactly what happened to her, but she ended up being in, she was locked away from society for like 10 plus years or whatever. And,
or 20 or 30 or 40, yeah, depending on what your continuity would keep with Spider-Man. So
yeah, so she was locked up. And I forget who it was that was it. I think Ezekiel.
Ezekiel, yeah.
Who I don't really. He was introduced, I guess, during the time when I wasn't really reading comics either. So I'm not really sure to.
Yeah, he was in my dark area too, where I was like, when I saw him, I was like, okay, who the hell is this? And I read up on him, and his origin more or less directly tie, not even more or less, it does directly tie to the events of Spider-Verse. So he was an important figure. Like, it makes sense as to what he is. I can speak about it more when, or speak about it now, about who he is in regards to the overall Spider event. If you want to wait until Spider-Verse, I could drop that or whatever, because it makes sense.
So she was introduced in the first couple issues of Amazing Spider-Man, and we dealt with the Electro and Black Cat, which then goes into the Edge of Spider-Verse, which were a couple of issues in Amazing Spider-Man, and also had its very own, like, four or five issue limited series, which told just like one-off stories, featuring different spider characters in different multiverses and how they were coming into contact with the inheritors. And there was even two extra issues of Superior Spider-Man thrown into the Spider-Verse or Edge of Spider-Verse tie-in. I believe they were Superior Spider-Man 31 and 32 showed the story of what happened to Doc Ock when he was Spider-Man and he had encountered the Spider-Man of 2099. And there was that little gap of time where Doc Ock was thrown into the future, even though we didn't know it at the time. He left our multiverse and then came back at the end of that issue of Superior Spider-Man. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I remember that. Okay. So it was like issue 30, or I don't know if it was the final one. It might have been issue 30, where that whole something happened where I think it was like an explosion that was going on, and he got thrown into thrown into the future for 24 hours or something, and he came back, and 32 and 33. Fill the gap as to where he actually was. And I remember when they were speaking on Spider-Verse and they said, and I was like, okay, so Superior Spider-Man is going to be in it. I wonder if it's another multiverse where the Superior Spider-Man event happened and he just stayed and Peter never came back. I'm thinking that that's what it was, but no, he's the 616 Peter Parker, and the rejuvenated one is there, and he still doesn't. Well, you know, talking about Spider-Verse, they're existing in the same time and space. And what's so crazy is that, as I said before, with all the stuff going on, so for those of you, depending on what you read, right? Mm-hmm. The Marvel Universe has been under siege as far as the multiverse is gone. It's like there's so many problems with the multiverse and time and space in general. For example, in X-Men, the original five's teenage X-Men are in the present, and something is stopping them from going back, and they've been tried to send them back into their own time, so they're stuck in the past, in the present. Mm-hmm. Or in their future. Well, I'll say that. Then we have the events of the Avengers where Earths are colliding with each other and these incursions are happening and one Earth has to die so another one survives, and you have the Illuminati trying to do stuff and hiding it from everybody else. So all the books have been, and now you have Spider-Verse, where all these Spider-Men from the different multiverse are coming together. So it seems like every writer in Marvel right now, you have the out to just chalk it up to the multiverse, all this craziness. Oh, yo, you know the multiverse.
And they're taking advantage of it too, because there's so much going on. Like you said, the original X-Men being in the present, but then Brian Bendis is also taking them to the Ultimate Universe, so they're interacting with the Ultimate X-Men now.
They went from being in their wrong time. I think I read all new X-Men as well, and I think it was Jean that was saying that she's like, she was telling the story, and she's like, so I'm not even in my own time. I'm not in my own space. Like, this is really, like, crazy right now. So, yeah, so, like, so everybody is everywhere at every time. It's sick.
Yeah, I could go on. Like, Fantastic, I'm trying to get into the Fantastic Four now because they're about to introduce the characters from the Heroes Reborn universe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's about to start going on. Because remember, Franklin Richards, I think, created that universe. So they're doing some stuff with him, and that universe is going to start popping back up in that book. And
That's his pocket universe, yeah. Right? Like in the closet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I stopped reading Fantastic Four because I heard they're going to cancel it. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to reboot it or...
They probably have something planned in the, you know, after it ends, but I've never really been the biggest Fantastic Four fan, but I like the artists on there now, and the lead up to the end sounds like it might be kind of interesting, so I figure why not give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, when was the latest issue? Because I
came out last week, 13, I believe.
Because last I remember, they got their kids taken from them,
yeah,
and all that shit. And, I think Johnny lost his powers, and the Thing is in jail. So
the thing just broke out of jail, and Johnny still doesn't have his powers. But
okay. Yeah, I may check it out towards the end because that. Yeah, it might be cool.
And another reason why I want to check it out is because of, like, what we found out from the Avengers and New Avengers flash forward, what's going on with Sue and...
Oh, yeah, too. Yeah.
That looks like it.
With the S.H.I.E.L.D. Avengers, mm-hmm, and all of them.
That's going to be interesting. But let's see, back to Spider-Man. So yeah, Edge of Spider-Verse, we talked about the Superior Spider-Man tie-in issues, and then... Usually, you know, there's tie-ins for these events. Like, some of them you can kind of, like, not pay attention to, and others are kind of more interesting than others. I think Edge of Spider-Verse turned out to be more successful than probably Marvel even imagined it would be, just because they picked good creators to work on all these single issues. But the one that kind of skyrocketed in readership and just coverage was that Spider-Gwen, which I think was the issue 2 of Edge of Spider-Verse, where it was like an alternate reality where Gwen Stacy got bit by the radioactive spider, and Peter, I think, became the Lizard in that world, and then he died, and that was like her Uncle Ben dying was Peter, so she's decided to try to be a good superhero. And people, like, just the story was great. The visual design of the outfit for Spider-Gwen is going to have lots of cosplayers creating the outfit, trying to recreate the outfit.
Yeah, yeah. It's dope, man. It's dope. And what made Edge of Spider-Verse so, I will say, like, that it wasn't intrusive was that it was at the end of the Spider-Man books, mm-hmm, or whatever book it was. It was, you got like a supplemental taste of it was like a double feature. You got the main story and then you got the Edge of Spider-Verse. And what was crazy was that for that brief 7 and 8 Amazing Spider-Man, where they were telling the story with Ms. Marvel, it almost, Edge of Spider-Verse was better than the Ms. Marvel story.
Yeah.
And it was like, or they were at least on par with each other. So it was, because at that point, it became a rush to Spider-Verse. You know what I'm saying? Because it was like, all right, it literally was like, this is random as hell. Like, this is like one of those, I thought this was like Marvel Team-Up. You remember that book?
Yeah. And
that's exactly what it was. It was a 2-issue arc of Marvel Team-Up. Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel, and then let's go to Spider-Man.
Yeah, it seemed like it was kind of forced and just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, me. I mean, better that than they try to do something else. I mean, it was like, it was cool, but it literally did come out of, like, even if they would have led in with like Miss Marvel number whatever, and he would have made an appearance in there, and then it rolled in like a 2 or 3 issue arc that started in Miss Marvel and ended in Amazing. Like that might have made a little bit more sense. But I mean, it wasn't enough for me to be, because it was actually a good story, so I'm not mad at it. But yeah. I was just like, guys, you might as well have just made the Edge of Spider-Verse the last 2 books, like make it the whole book. But they were solid stories, and they were a lot of from the Edge of Spider-Verse. Which Spider characters did you like the most?
I liked Spider-Gwen, obviously. I'm trying to remember the first issue I know was the Spider-Noir. That story was...
But he's been around. So.
Yeah, and he's
Spider-Man Noir's been around.
Yeah, he's been around, and he's actually still around now in Spider-Verse. It might really just be those two. I wasn't crazy about... I know Dustin Weaver did the art and story on his book. His was like the manga.
Yeah, manga. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And that was all right. I wasn't crazy about his writing on it. I do love his artwork, though. And I know a lot of people like that last issue from the guy that's in the band. Hold on, I have to look it up while we're talking. I guess he's in a famous band or something. So he got a lot of his fans to check out the book too. Let's see here, Marvel. I got them all on my computer here. It's Spider-Verse 5. Yeah. Let's see who was doing this issue. While I look this up, did any of the Spider characters stick out to you in the series?
I mean, I'll take Spider-Gwen out of it, because if you're a Spider-Man fan and didn't like Spider-Gwen, then you're just either very cynical or you don't know what good taste is. I like the SPDR, like the Mobile Suit Gundam girl. I don't know if you remember that one, where they get bit by the spider, and it's almost like a symbiotic relationship, and they're police where they're in mech suits, the spider mech suit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was my favorite. And because I like the manga Spider-Man, the Aaron Aikman, I think that was his name.
Yeah.
And I liked how the thing I liked the art more than the story, because the story was very fucking random. Like, I wanted to know where those monsters came from more. Like, at the end, I hope Moreland got rid of him. Like, I would just say that, because it was just like, whatever. But I liked the whole design of how the enemies were on Marvel cards. And I don't know if people remember, like, you remember Marvel cards, right?
Yeah.
Like, when Topps was making the Marvel cards of the different characters with their...
It had the whole Trapper Keeper with all of those things.
With the strengths, the weaknesses, their win-loss record. When I saw that was such a blast of the past for me that I was like, yo, this is cool. But I like Spider-Gwen. I like the mech suit spider. Who else? I like that little horror story they did with the Peter who got bit and then started killing off the different people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that one, but it was like he got bit. It was almost like Tales from the Crypt Spider-Man. It was pretty cool, but you know, it gave us some good taste into what was to come.
Okay, so the writer I was looking for was Gerard Way.
Okay.
Yeah, he has a big following, so he got a lot of people to check that final issue out.
Which issue was that?
That was the one with the girl in the suit.
The spider, SPDR.
Yeah, the SPDR.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, the mech suit. Yeah, hell yeah. That was good. I hope she makes an appearance in the Spider-Verse, because that was dope.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the Edge of Spider-Verse. And in the Superior Spider-Man issues... The Doc Ock Superior Spider-Man is going around to the different multiverses and basically recruiting an army, which then Peter and his group run into in the Amazing Spider-Man issues of Spider-Verse. So basically, the Spider-Verse tie-in issue of Amazing Spider-Man starts with Peter stopping some criminals, and then all of a sudden, like all the Spider characters in the 616 show up together, and then they're all taken to like a safe place where the Inheritors can't find them or can't trace them, because they basically fill Peter in on how the Inheritors are they can sense the Spiders and hunt them down and kill them. Except on, I think it was like Earth 1?
Earth 13.
Oh, it's 13, okay.
Yeah.
And supposedly, like, the 616 Peter is, like, the chosen one, because he's the only one to have fought and beaten an Inheritor until they find out that the Spider-Ock and his team have done the same thing as well. In the second issue, we find some interesting things out that, I guess it's like, there's three important characters, like a totem. I forget. One's a totem, one's the bride, and one...
It's the scion, the bride, and the other. Okay. So those are three specific totems. And, of course, I'm guessing, because I don't know who the scion is.
They haven't revealed who it is yet.
But the first two are in 616. The bride is Silk. The other is Kane. Scarlet Spider. And if anybody remembers the storyline from it was a storyline in Amazing Spider-Man with the other where Peter, it was like you could either choose to be the one or you could be the other. And that was when his body got taken over, and then he ended up cocooning and coming back as a new Spider-Man where he had organic powers. So for a time before they did that One New Day, Brand New Day bullshit.
I think what was interesting with a couple of things with Spider-Verse so far. One, for this whole time, Peter doesn't believe in the mystic part of Spider-Man. He doesn't believe in it at all. Like all the Jessica Drew and the original Madam Web were telling him for a while that you're a part of the Great Web. You're a part of the Great Web. Like you've heard, if you've been reading Spider-Man long enough, you've heard about the Great Web. And he laughs it off as mumbo jumbo or whatever. And it's actually true. You have a Weaver who the Inheritors lock down and have them finding the spider totems, who are anybody who's a spider character in a multiverse, and bringing them there to eat. So that's one thing. The second thing is talking about Ezekiel. When I did the reading up on Ezekiel, he actually was a character who he knew what was going on with Spider-Man, and like he was like in touch with that whole totem world. So the one thing that I read that was super interesting was he was the first person to tell Spider-Man that you are a totem of the spider. And the one thing that he said that I was like, wow, that's deep. He said the spider that bit him did not gain its powers from the radioactive blast. It always had its power, and it didn't fall on him and bite him. It was trying to get to him to pass him the totem power before it died. I was like, whoa. Like, I was like, yo, that's really deep. Like, whoever thought of that, that was, like, actually ill. So it's like, you think that it's radioactive, it's da-da-da-da, but it actually was a totem. And he even said, that's why all of your enemies, some of your most strongest enemies are animal-based, because the other totems know that you're a totem, and they're, like, threatened.
Oh.
And they want to attack. So if you think about Doc Ock, Octopus, Scorpion, Rhino, Vulture, you know, like, I don't know if you want to consider Goblin's not an animal, but just like those, all of those type of enemies. Like, he's like, they're the totems, the animal totems are always drawn to you because they know that you're the spider totem. So that's because one of the Spider-Man, the old man Spider-Man, was revealed to be an alternate universe Ezekiel, who, just like his world is 616 Ezekiel, knew what was going on and told them about a bit of the plan before he passed. So that was pretty cool. And also, the one caveat about this event that I had was when they said every Spider-Man ever. Like, when I tell you I'm a Spider-Man nerd, I'm a Spider-Man nerd. I know all of these freaking Spider-Man. Other than the new ones that they've made up, I know every incarnation of Spider-Man there can be. So I knew there was one Spider-Man that could clean these inheritors up real quick. And it's Cosmic Spider-Man. Spider-Man that gained the powers of the Enigma Force, which actually belonged to Captain Universe,
yes,
who's a woman now in Marvel 616. So I the whole time I was saying, why don't they get a cosmic one and go, you know, destroy him? That's why the Earth 13 is the safe zone, because that's a cosmic Spider-Man safe zone. That's the cosmic Spider-Man's world. And the inheritors won't go there because that's probably would be the other only world that they would lose and probably get eliminated. And the thing with him is his cosmic powers are tied to his multiverse. So if he goes to another multiverse, he's just a regular Spider-Man. So that's why he can't leave either. And he says in the book, if I need to, I will be there to fight, but just know I won't be cosmic. So that has me kind of, that sounds like a foreshadow to me that he's going to make some type of sacrifice for the squad. So that was important to me because that was the one thing I was thinking of the whole time in the back of my head. All they need to do is find a cosmic Spider-Man, but now it's caveated with that. So it's pretty ill, man.
Yeah.
Pretty ill.
Trying to think anything else going on in Spider-Man. I like how, I mentioned on my Comic Book Chronicles podcast, which you can find on theclicknation.com, last week, how I think it was Amazing Spider-Man number 10, the last issue that came out. It seemed like a lot of stuff was happening in that issue, but a lot of it, not in a bad way, but just like they had to like set up all the spinoffs, like the Scarlet Spiders series that comes out tomorrow with the clones. The clones.
Yeah, team clones.
Yeah, team clones. And then also out tomorrow is, I think, Spider-Man 2099 number 6, where he goes back to the year 2099 with the six-armed Spider-Man and Lady Spider, who was introduced in the Spider-Verse like anthology book, which I guess we haven't mentioned yet.
Oh, yeah.
I actually like that, just like with the Edge of Spider-Verse, I enjoyed the Spider-Verse number 1 a lot more than I thought it would be. Just because it kind of focuses on, again, more the alternate reality spider characters. But, like, the Lady Spider story I enjoyed a lot. So seeing her show up in Spider-Man 2099 will be fun to read. But, the last issue of Amazing Spider-Man just basically set up a lot of the spinoff stories of... And, oh, yeah, and Spider-Woman number 1 launching, having her be the kind of the... bodyguard for Silk, who is the bride, as we found out.
Yeah, it was. I was laughing at towards the end of Amazing Spider-Man 10 when I saw that everybody just started breaking off because because it was revealed that, I guess, the other Kane and the bride, Silk, was, they give off some, they almost act like a stronger beacon to the inheritors than any of the Spider-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, they can be detected. So the inheritors find the 2099 safe zone and go buck wild attacking, and everybody has to scatter. So some Spider-Man went back to the safe zone. This just so happened that the reason why the Scarlet Spiders break off is because superior strike force. I call them the Spider Corps because that's exactly what they are. It's like the Green Lantern Corps. They're the Spider Corps. So superior Spider Corps kills one of the inheritors, but then he comes back out of nowhere as a clone, or comes back out of nowhere and they don't know why. And Kane tells the one of the Earths, Ben Reilly, Reilly, you think of what I'm thinking? He's like, yeah, clone. And they find out where the clone was originated from. So they're going after it. And the Jessica Carpenter, the Spider-Woman clone from the Ultimate Universe, goes with them because, you know, the clones got to stick together. Then 2099 gets out of there while they chase him down. And then I forget why Spider-Woman broke off. She's after some. I forgot what she was going after.
Well, they had since the inheritors can sense Spider or Silk, they need to get her on the move, and they decided to have Spider-Woman go off with her to keep her safe. So they were kind of like just their universe hopping.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep the inheritors off their tail.
Oh yeah. So and it's Spider-Woman, Silk, and Spider-Man Noir. That I believe Noir went with them. So, and that dynamic is going to be hilarious because I would say if you read all the supplement books like Spider-Man, Spider-Verse Team Up, Spider-Verse Number One, like those have been really good because you get a sense for all the other stuff that's been going on. Like the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man Noir, he's from the 30s. So he's calling people kid. I think Six-Armed Spider-Man kept calling him Bogart and he didn't know why. And he would call, like, I think he called Spider-Woman something girl. And she's like, girl. Like, you know, like, it's just hilarious. So it's like you're dealing with people from different Earths, different time periods. Because even if you think of the Ultimate Verse, the Ultimate Verse is 2014 our time, but with all the heroes at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ill. So you deal with all those dynamics, and it was just like all of that, the way they broke up. I'm like, all right. And then we have the pending fight with Amazing and Superior Spider-Man, which is probably going to be crazy.
And that hasn't even really taken off yet. There still hasn't been that big confrontation between Peter and Ock yet. We got to see that.
Yeah, that's going to be ridiculous. Have you checked out Spider-Verse Number One or Spider-Verse Team Up?
The team up I wasn't too crazy about. I kind of flipped through that, but Spider-Verse I did like.
Okay, team up was all right. It was, I mean, it reminded me of Marvel Team Up a little bit, but it was kind of like Bang Bang stories.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're more or less just trying to save Peter Parker's throughout the multiverse. I like the one story in there when they found one Spider-Man. He might have been a Ben Reilly, where it was like the reverse of Parker Luck. Like, you know, like Parker Luck where he's always in, where the dude was super optimistic. And he's like, when they're telling him, you know, we're being hunted or whatever, he's like, guys, we're going to win. We're Spider-Man. We're the good guys. And then he's always like, well, I remember when I fought against Carl. And they're like, dude, we don't have time for you to recant your victories. We got to go. And then they end up fighting because Verna, I guess she's like the mother of the inheritors. She has a pack of Spider-Man enemies from different multiverses that she uses like her hound. So she had the vultures that went to attack. Vultures end up drugging them and they can't move. And they're all like, you, it was the old man, Spider-Man, Spider-Ham. Oh, let me speak about Spider-Ham for a second. I am a Spider-Ham stan. Like, I've loved Spider-Ham. Like, I remember they used to have a standalone comic for Spider-Ham. Spider-Ham used to always be that secondary story. So it's just so hilarious. Like, he's a cartoon pig. And there was even a scene in Amazing Spider-Man 10 where the spider monkey looks at him and is like, oh shit, it's a cartoon pig. And he's like, dude, really? You? And Peter goes, that's it. Nobody else speaks. That wins the day. So that was pretty cool. But with the team up, the fact that the dude willed himself to get out of the paralysis and do something for them to like wear it off, I was like, wow. And they were just looking like, you know, he really won with optimism. So I thought that story was pretty cool. It's just like overarching themes of those stories. And even with the six-armed Spider-Man, how they found a Peter who was like, who the spider bite turned him into a spider. And he made a formula to cure him of it. And that was the same formula that made him get six arms. So he had to overcome that. But Spider-Verse number one was dope. It was dope because it was like six little stories that all were like good to the point and dope. But I'll tell you what my favorite story was in Spider-Verse. My favorite Spider-Verse story was the last one. The black and white one.
Oh, I actually skipped that, I think.
What? Yeah. Oh, now you gotta read. I'm not even gonna speak about it. You have to, especially like we're like in the same age range. So I know you go back. I'm gonna tell you this. Go back, read it, and then hit me and tell me what you think. Because anybody who you may be so against Spider-Verse, I don't care how you read it. And read it especially for the last story, because the last story is something where it's like, it's one of those fourth wall stories where you kind of like, yo, that's so true. And I was like laughing my ass off. Like, I'm thinking about it now. It was so dope. But
was that the black and white comic strip one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Sure. So definitely check it out. It's like a 2-3 page read, and it's hilarious. But those type of stories, just giving the nod to the Spider-Verse, like different Spider-Verse characters, I liked it a lot. So the tie-ins are cool. I'm hoping that, you know, it keeps going. It's cool to contain it within Amazing Spider-Man, and you get the supplement everywhere else.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's
pretty
good.
You can pick and choose what you want to read.
Yeah, exactly. I'm probably going to read everything just to be consistent with it. But, you know, I've been pleased this far.
Dope. That actually gives us a nice little ending note for the Spider-Verse portion of the talk. And actually, I guess for the podcast period, we've hit the two main topics we want to discuss: Endgame from Batman and DC, and Spider-Verse from Marvel Comics and Spider-Man family of books.
Yeah.
Go ahead and let people, one more time, give them a reminder of where they can find you online.
Once again, my name is Jeff J. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff J Says. And to check out all the latest comic book reviews and TV show reviews, and even just talking about the hot topics of the week, month, year, whatever, you could check me out on ADHDshow.com. That's A-D, Alpha, Delta, Harry, Delta, show.com. You could also follow our account at That ADHD Show. So, you know, we talk good stuff, just like Tim does at Click Nation. It's just a crew of people who like discussing what their passions and the coolest things out. So, you know. That's really it for me.
And you can follow myself on Twitter at TimDogg, TimDogg98, and at TheClickNation. The website is TheClickNation.com. We record Comic Book Chronicles live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. If you follow me on Twitter, I usually send out the YouTube link to view the show live an hour before the show goes up. So we're closing in on 100 episodes. I think we did the math. The 100th episode should come around the new year.
Oh, wow. So what number is this?
We just recorded 96 last Thursday. So it's like we have, let's see, 96, 97, 98. Four more episodes to go. And with taking this Thursday off and then taking the Thursday off for the Christmas week, I think leaves us exactly, like, I think the 100th will be, like, the first week in January.
Oh, nice.
Still trying to figure out what we're going to do for that episode. Got to have something special.
Yeah, man, that's a 100 episodes is a great milestone, man. You guys deserve it. I told people a lot, like, you were one of my first follows when it came to talking about comic books and movies and all that, because there wasn't a lot of like black men or black people in general that was talking about years ago. You know that.
Yeah.
Like when you first finding people on Twitter and you finding your like the different people who are talking about stuff, I didn't see people like, you know, you have established people with just like everyday people talking about it. Like they might shoot out a tweet or two and then it's like whatever. But you were one of the first people that I saw consistent talking about comic books, talking about all that. And I'm like, oh yeah, I need to follow this dude because he's talking my language right now. And, you know, everybody want to be cool or act like they too cool. I don't care. I don't take myself seriously. I love it. Everybody knows in my life. Everybody knows on Twitter or whatever that this is what we do. And you see what all like, and this was pre Iron Man and Avengers and Christopher Nolan, Batman and Superman. Oh, before it got hot, like hot, mainstream hot, we was there. So I definitely salute you. And I thank you for letting me be a part of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast. So I definitely appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. No problem at all. You'll be back. We'll be doing some more recordings in the future.
No doubt. No doubt.
So with that, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to this special edition of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast. And I guess we'll check you out next time.